Blackstone Publishing presents Apprentice Needed by Obert Skye. This book is read by Kirby Hayborn. To my brother Mike, a wizard of words. Prologue. This is a good intro. The phone in the study rang as Ozzy sat in the room reading The Dark is Rising. The ring was an alarm, indicating to the senses that a response of some kind was needed. Ozzy leaned over and looked. The caller ID read, Unknown Caller. Ozzy sat up straight. There was only one person he knew who fit that description. He dropped his book and picked up the receiver. Hello?
No time for small talk, the voice on the other end said. You know who this is.
Rin?
After a few moments of silence, Ozzy spoke again.
You know I can't see you if you're nodding yes.
I forget you're limited in your abilities as a non-wizard.
Where are you?
Not important, Rin said kindly. You need to know that things are happening.
What things?
Again, we don't have time for small talk. Just know that the time has come.
The phone went dead. Apparently, the wizard didn't even have time to say goodbye. Ozzy held the receiver in his hand for a few moments before placing it back on the base. It was the first he had heard from Rin since he had disappeared in the mountains of New Mexico, and it had gone about as well as he could have expected.
Things are happening, he whispered to himself.
Ozzy jumped up and walked quickly from the study toward Siggy's room. He had some good news to deliver. According to Rin, the time had come. Of course, it was unknown just what time had come, but for the moment, that didn't matter. The wizard was returning. Chapter 1. Through the Dark. The day had departed, dashing off like a frightened child as the first slender fingers of dusk gripped the sky. In its absence, darkness arrived at 1221 Ocean View Drive. Like a large visitor whom nobody had invited, the inkiness came early and in force, its arms filled with fatigue and exhaustion. It sat down on everything and moaned like an old man with tired legs and no intention of getting back up anytime soon. Amidst the black, the home struggled to keep its glow. The windows of the large manor were lit, and dozens of porch lights circled the abode, trying their best to remain seen. A strong wind twisted through the air and began to push around anything weak or loose that it could find. Through the bay windows of the kitchen, a person with nerve or audacity or a desire to be intrusive and out of line could easily peep in and see what was going on. Inside, sitting around a large table, there was a boy, a girl, and a bird. The boy, Ozzy, was tall, even sitting down. He was 15 and possessed brown hair that came down over his ears. He was handsome in a way that he wasn't aware of, with gray eyes that typically did a fine job of matching his emotions. His nose was straight, but his head was tilted as he looked at the playing cards he had in his hand.
Come on, the girl said.
Ozzy looked across the table, and his eyes settled on Siggy. Her mop of curly hair was tied back, the overhead chandelier spotlighting her face. Her dark skin was beautiful to Ozzy, something he thought he'd seen in a giant box of crayons. She had turned 16 2 weeks before, but she carried herself with an unusual confidence that made her look years older.
Seriously, Siggy said with a smile of teeth and tease. You're slower at this game than Monopoly.
You should see him play Pictionary, a small bird chirped in. Clark was no ordinary bird, quite the opposite.
He had been created by Ozzy's father many years before to aid him in his scientific endeavors. Clark was mostly made of metal. His body and wings were black, but his tail was tin, his beak was gold, and the tips of his talons were copper. He was sentient, sarcastic, and something to behold.
"I'm not that bad at Pictionary," Ozzy said defensively.
"It took you like an hour to draw a rock," Clark reminded him. "You're a good drawer, but you shouldn't add shade and dimension while playing Pictionary."
"I do," Ozzy said. "Rocks are important."
"You sound like Rin," the bird said without thinking. Ozzy stared at Siggy and Clark as an awkward silence dropped in. The truth was, they all wished Rin were there, but the wizard was gone. He had slipped away after the great fight at the top of the Stormy Mountain in New Mexico. Rin said he was going to Quarfelt, a place for wizards that may or may not exist. He had vanished like a ghost, and all three were constantly looking over their shoulders, or wings, in hope that he would reappear. The only contact any of them had received was a short phone call to Ozzy 2 weeks before, on Siggy's birthday. Even though he had made no mention of his daughter's birthday, the call had still filled them with hope. But since then, nothing. "Rin does like boulders," Ozzy said. Clark hopped off the table onto the top of Ozzy's head. Hoping to make the hair more nest-like, the bird began clawing at the boy's scalp with his copper-tipped talons.
"Ouch!"
"I bet people would pay good money to have their heads scratched like this," the bird pointed out.
"I don't think they would."
"Well, then, it helps my feet," Clark said. "I get restless talons if I don't move them around."
"It's been 2 weeks since he called," Siggy complained. "I'm surprised he's not back."
"Me too. He said something's happening."
"I don't know about that phone call," Clark said, being the chirp of reason. "Mr. Wizard was probably just talking about getting a haircut. Or maybe he's gained weight and that's his way of telling you."
"I don't think so," Ozzy said. The three of them had discussed the short phone call many times over the last 2 weeks. All their thoughts and theories were pointless, though, because there is no way to predict what a wizard like Rin ever meant, or to know what someone like him would do. Siggy yawned.
"You know what? I'm sorry, but I think I'm done for the night."
She tossed her cards onto the table. They'd been playing a slow game of cards for an hour, but the dark wind outside made it feel like the world was shutting down. And Siggy, it seemed, felt the same way.
"I'll see you two in the morning."
Ozzy set his cards down.
"Good, I was about to lose anyway."
"Good night, Ozzy," she said with a smile.
He smiled back, and Siggy slipped off to her first floor room near the home's library.
"Is your face okay?"
Clark asked once she was gone.
"I mean, is that supposed to be a smile?"
"Yes," Ozzy said as he stood up.
"Human mouths are so messed up. I like a straightforward beak."
"We can't all be perfect. Your smile just proved that point." Ozzy put away the cards and moved out the side door of the kitchen. Outside was a short breezeway and a steep set of wooden stairs that led up to a room above the garage. It was dark and windy as he climbed the stairs to the second floor. Clark fought the wind and flew beside him.
"What's the deal with you and Siggy anyway?" the bird asked.
"What do you mean?"
"In all the movies I've seen, people fall in love much quicker than you two. They go bowling together, maybe sing something at each other, and then get married."
"What movies are you watching?"
"I just saw the one about the magic pink elixir."
"That was a commercial for Pepto-Bismol."
"Well, it had a happy ending. Isn't that what everyone wants?"
"How would I know? I'm not sure what a happy ending feels like." Clark hovered inches away from Ozzy's nose.
"Really? You can't take a guess?"
the bird asked.
I think it would feel like owning the motor of a 1968 Mustang.
Clark had been binge-watching a lot of videos about engines lately.
You and I have different definitions of happy, Ozzy said. You love things that are metal, like engines, and I'm looking for an ending that feels complete.
Well, if Rin was here, you know what he'd say.
What?
I don't know. I'm a bird, not a wizard.
Ozzy stopped 3 stairs from the top. His left hand began to buzz, and he could feel the sensation rattle through his entire body.
Clark fluttered in front of Ozzy's face.
Are you okay?
I think I'm just tired.
Ozzy climbed the last 3 steps and opened the door into his room.
Clark flew in and glided over to the desk in the corner. He hopped into a nest he'd made from a small pile of orange yarn.
Keep the desk light on, Clark said. With Siggy's mom gone, I want to make sure I stay powered up. I promised Patty I'd keep an eye on things.
3 hours before, Siggy's mom, Patty, had taken a shuttle to the Portland airport. She was on her way to be the keynote speaker at a 5-day conference in Seattle. She had been hesitant to leave Siggy and Ozzy, but Clark had promised to act as chaperone and guard bird. He took the task very seriously.
Thanks for keeping us safe, Ozzy said kindly.
It's what I've done from the start.
Clark was right. The bird had kept an eye on Ozzy from the moment they'd met. And now, even though things were calm, they both knew trouble had not ceased to exist in the world, and what they had gone through months before had been dangerous and life-changing. It had involved people who would stop at nothing to get what they wanted, and knowing that made it hard for them to ever feel completely at ease. Having to have a guard bird was just a sign of the times.
Good night, Clark.
Ozzy patted the bird on his small head.
Really?
Clark said.
It seems too windy outside to be good.
Okay.
Night, Clark.
The bedroom above the garage was small with 2 large windows that ran from floor to ceiling on the west wall. The windows overlooked the backyard and the beach that spread out in front of the Pacific Ocean. At the moment, however, they simply overlooked darkness. The wind rattled the windows. Inside the room was a bed with an iron bed frame, its mattress covered in white linens and topped with 4 white pillows. Next to the bed was the small desk Clark slept on, along with a chair and a trash can with pictures of seashells painted on it. Across the room from the bed was a door that led to an attached bathroom and an open closet. All the doors in the room were painted blue, while everything else was white. Ozzy washed up in his bathroom and then turned off the overhead light. He left the desk lamp on for Clark, who was lying still in his nest, his eyes closed. Ozzy sat down on the edge of his bed and tried to calm his mind. His left hand buzzed again, and the soft vibration felt uncomfortable. He held his hand in front of him and stared at his digits in the dimly lit room. The pointer finger on his left hand had a birthmark that wrapped his entire finger like a purple sheath.
Is this what you mean by something's happening, Rin?
He said aloud. The wind outside howled, but the question went unanswered. At the age of 7, Ozzy's parents had been taken from him, ripped away in front of his own eyes. He'd been left alone in a small house in the middle of an isolated forest to raise himself. When he had grown old enough to begin looking for answers, the quest had been long and filled with some less than happy endings, one of which was coming to know that his father and mother were no longer alive. That ending had also included Rin's disappearance. The wizard had become an important part of Ozzy's life, and now he too was gone. The wind chuffed and stuttered against the glass. Ozzy lay down on his bed and closed his gray eyes. For the first time in many years, he had a place where he belonged with people who loved him.
but even with nice sheets and soft pillows, sleep didn't come easy. He missed the cloaked house he had grown up in. His attic bedroom with its round window was a part of him that he'd given up to live as the lawyers and guardians in his life saw fit. Now he had things like electricity and warm showers, but he missed the forest. His finger buzzed again. When Ozzy was younger, he had believed the strange birthmark meant something. He thought it might be a powerful sign, an indication of some great ability, but it wasn't until his struggle on the mountain that his finger began to feel like anything more than just a finger. That night, he had felt it trigger something in his mind, something strong and confusing. Since then, however, nothing had happened until tonight, when his finger had begun buzzing. It took a while, but eventually Ozzy fell into a sort of half-slumber, a fitful sleep, his body twitching like the whiskers of a worried cat in the throes of curiosity. His breathing fluctuated between shallow and deep. Sweat ran down his forehead and covered his sheets. He closed and opened his fists as his back arched and he shivered from hair to soles. Ozzy gasped. Struggling to get air, he shook. Then, as he relaxed, his lungs did a spot-on imitation of a boiler slowly bellowing. Ozzy's head rocked back and forth, but his dark hair stayed fixed, plastered to his top like a puddle of muddy tar.
Sig!
He tried to yell, but his mind wouldn't let him. The wind outside pressed its stormy face up against the glass, rattling the panes, curious to see what was happening. Ozzy stopped shaking and sat up in bed. His blankets fell to the floor. The birthmark on his finger buzzed like a reminder had been set by his soul to wake up his body and cause great alarm. With his eyes closed, he swung his legs over the edge of the bed and stepped on the floor. His bare toes grabbed at the carpet. He wasn't asleep, but his mind was not his own. The wind thumped against the house like the bass line of a harrowing song. Ozzy blinked and opened his eyes. He shuffled to one of the huge windows that were facing west toward the ocean. He pressed both of his palms up against the glass. His hands shook as they touched the shivering window. Turning slowly, he walked back to the bed. The iron bed frame had four decorative bed knobs at each corner, each a little larger than a billiard ball. Ozzy grabbed a bed knob on a post at the foot of the bed. He closed his eyes and unscrewed the iron bed knob. The metal sphere squeaked until it came loose in his hands. The weight of the round knob pulled his arm downward. He swiveled, and with one smooth motion, threw the heavy object at the closest window.
Crash!
The bed knob hit the center of the glass, creating an ear-splitting sound and thousands of veiny fractures that covered the entire window with a webbed pattern. After hitting the glass, the metal bed knob dropped to the floor with a thud. Ozzy just stood there, his mind feeding him messages he didn't want to obey. Without warning or reason, he ran across the room, barreling directly into the already fractured glass with his right shoulder. The second-story window burst outward in a thousand shards as Ozzy flew through it. The boy didn't scream or flail. He just hit the grassy ground behind the garage, rolling toward the trees at the edge of the yard. His body crumpled up into a heap of human as it came to a stop near two large boulders. He stood up. The wind was thrilled to have full access to him now. It enveloped Ozzy, buffering him from side to side and tossing his dark hair every which way but neat. The lights on the back of the garage and house swayed wildly, creating jittery shadows that danced rhythmically around the boy.
Still more asleep than awake, he started to walk away from the garage. His body was covered with small cuts and tiny splinters of glass. His face, however, was expressionless. Ozzy walked over the grass, past some boulders, through the trees, and between a stone bench and a metal railing. He stepped onto a thin, sandy path winding past the long grasses down toward the beach. His expression remained the same. Wind smacked and shoved him around like a pushy bully who had no understanding of how a person should act. Sand blew through the air like errant pieces of glass, stinging his arms and head and eyes, adding to the cuts and scrapes he'd already gathered. Still, he kept walking. A small dot of blackness competing with the night moved in behind the boy and spoke.
"What are you doing?"
Clark chirped loudly from behind him. The bird's small voice was barely audible over the raging wind, and the strong gusts were making it difficult for Clark to catch up.
"Hey!" Clark screeched. "What gives?"
The wind tossed the bird back toward the house. Clark righted himself and fought the air. It was dark, and the electric charge he'd accumulated before shutting down dropped quickly as he used his full strength to push against the elements.
"Stop walking!" he tweeted. "Ozzy!"
Hearing his name, the boy stopped for a moment, blinked twice, and then kept moving. The momentary pause was just enough for Clark to catch up and dig his claws into the back of Ozzy's t-shirt.
"What are you doing?"
Clark screamed.
"I like the ocean as much as you, but it's the middle of the night and the wind has lost its mind."
In the distance, massive mounds of water crashed down, pummeling the shore with their heavy bodies.
"Seriously!"
Clark yelled as he tried to climb up Ozzy's shirt onto his left shoulder.
I'm wearing down! I can't!"
Clark was out of power. He let go. His left talons raked Ozzy's shoulder as the wind violently flipped him back toward the house like a wad of unwanted paper. Ozzy continued toward the water. Now something was different. The deep scratch from Clark's talons had awakened something inside the boy. His head thrashed from side to side, and his feet moved slower as he began to fight whatever was happening. The elements pushed him closer and closer to the water. Mist from the waves rose up and over him, soaking his body and clothes. He tried to yell, but his mind was not his own. Something was moving him. His legs, his arms, and his body were being manipulated, working together to lead him directly into the raging sea. His feet reached the shore as waves taller than most hills crashed down around him. He fought the wind and water, but it was pointless, because even as he struggled mentally, his body continued to walk. Ozzy stepped into the waves. The sea pushed him backwards, but his body kept him surging forward. In a moment, the water was up to his waist, then his chest. He moved deeper as wave after wave came thundering down on top of him. His being shook from the cold and relentless ocean. Water filled his mouth and blinded his eyes. He could taste the salt and the unsavory realization of what was happening. Death seemed like the most likely next step. The sea ripped his legs out from under him, and Ozzy sank below the wet and deadly surface. Chapter 2. Tearing Me Apart. Siggy's brown eyes flashed open, and her heart was racing. Something had woken her up. She laid in her bed, trying to figure out what it had been. A dream? The wind?
a troublesome metal raven that was trying to be a chaperone slash guard bird but was failing at being quiet? The wind, she decided. As if to verify her thoughts, the wind outside of her curtain-covered windows screeched, making it sound like Mother Nature hadn't figured out how inappropriate catcalls were. Siggy closed her eyes, sighed, and then sat up. Her room was dark, but the light from a small clock on her desk lit up the space just enough to enable her to walk around without bumping into things. The wind whistled louder.
Knock it off!
Siggy stood up and walked to the light switch. She pushed the button, and her world became brighter. Glancing around, everything appeared to be in order, but from somewhere far away, she could hear something banging repeatedly. Wearing an oversized t-shirt and shorts, she stepped out into the hall.
Clark!
She called out. There was no answer. Siggy walked down the hall, and the thumping grew louder.
Clark? Ozzy?
The noise was strongest in the kitchen. It seemed to be coming from the direction of the garage. Siggy opened the kitchen door and looked across the breezeway at the wooden stairs. Something clapped and slammed. She looked up the dimly lit stairs and saw Ozzy's door blowing open and closed in the heavy wind.
Ozzy!
She shouted.
Clark!
Something was wrong. Siggy ran across the breezeway and up the stairs. She grabbed the handle of the slamming door and flipped on the overhead light. There, like a bad surprise, was Ozzy's empty bed and a shattered window. Wind poured into the room and around her like a fat, clumsy ghost. Bits of orange yarn were blowing everywhere.
Ozzy!
Stepping up to the window, she stared out into the windy darkness. Her hands were shaking. Her knees felt loose in their sockets. Her curly hair twisted in the wind. What Ozzy and she had already been through was dangerous and unsettling. The thought of new trouble made her stomach queasy. As she stared out what was left of the window, something came flying in and hit her in her uneasy stomach. Siggy fell backwards onto the bed and rolled to the floor. She reached for what had struck her and squeezed.
Stop it! Clark squawked. You're going to break my wings!
Siggy sat up on the floor, holding the bird in front of her.
What's going on?
It's Ozzy, Clark answered. He's freaking out!
The bird jumped from her hand and positioned himself near the lamp on the desk.
He's down on the beach, walking toward the waves. I couldn't stop him. I had to ride the wind just to get back here. You've got to get him. I'll come as soon as I'm charged.
Siggy didn't waste time with questions or comments. She turned quickly and ran out of the room and down the wooden stairs. She ran into the kitchen and grabbed a small red aluminum flashlight. Switching it on, she ran back out onto the breezeway and across the yard toward the beach. She passed the boulders and trees.
Ozzy!
She screamed, tossing the small beam of light from side to side.
Ozzy!
She ran over the sand toward the ocean as fast as she could, and when she reached the water, the waves were angry and deafening. Turning in a circle, she shone the flashlight across the waves and the sand.
Ozzy! Ozzy!
Clark powered through the wind and landed on her right shoulder. He clawed at her t-shirt.
He's in the water!
The bird yelled. Siggy ran into the ocean as if she knew what she was doing.
Where?
She screamed.
I don't know!
The bird screamed back.
But he was... there!
Clark shot off of Siggy's shoulder toward a spot 20 feet to her left. Siggy aimed the flashlight and marched farther into the water. She saw Ozzy's wet brown hair bobbing up in the distance.
Ozzy!
Siggy dropped the flashlight and dove under the water. The ocean was as black as the sky, but after only a few strong strokes and kicks, she ran directly into Ozzy. Siggy wrapped her right arm around his listless body and pushed her head up to get a lung full of air.
"You got him!"
Clark yelled as he fluttered above, the wind making it hard for him to fly in place. With her right arm around Ozzy's chest, Siggy began to swim back toward the shore. Under normal conditions, the act of dragging a 6-foot frame through the torrid water would have seemed impossible. But Siggy had adrenaline coursing through her body. Plus, she was being cheered on by a metallic bird with strong vocals.
"Don't let go!"
Siggy's feet finally found the bottom of the ocean. She used her legs to help pull Ozzy the rest of the way through the surging water and up onto shore. Clark dropped from the sky and started clawing at the boy's wet shirt. Siggy gave one last yank and then dropped Ozzy on the sand just out of reach of the waves. She collapsed next to him.
"Is he alive?"
Clark screamed above the wind. Siggy rolled over onto her hands and knees and took a few moments to cough and gasp for air. The intense darkness and continuous wind were relentlessly stealing her breath.
"Is he dead?"
Clark asked.
"He looks dead. Kiss him!"
the bird chirped.
"That's what they do in movies!"
Siggy ignored Clark and put her hand on Ozzy's chest to see if he was breathing.
"That's not how you kiss!"
Clark squawked.
"Smash your face against his!"
"It's okay," Siggy said.
"He's breathing. I can feel his chest moving."
"Oh."
Clark sounded almost disappointed.
"I just thought a kiss would be more dramatic. Besides, if he's alive, why isn't he moving?" "He's unconscious."
The night was so dark that Siggy could barely see the bird she was talking to.
"We need to get help."
"What about the flashlight?"
Clark asked in a panic.
"What about it? I really liked that light."
"Forget about that. I lost it in the ocean. We have to get him."
Siggy stopped talking because Ozzy had suddenly sat up. The relief on her face was visible even in the dark.
"You're okay,"
she said, throwing her arms around him as they sat next to each other on the sand. Ozzy didn't reply.
"He's probably mad about the flashlight," Clark said.
"He's not."
Ozzy stood up without saying anything.
"What are you doing?" Siggy asked. "You should rest."
The boy wasn't listening. He turned around twice and then began walking back toward the house. Siggy scrambled to get up and Clark darted onto Ozzy's left shoulder, grabbing his wet t-shirt with his talons.
"What's the deal?"
Clark tweeted.
"What are you doing?"
Ozzy kept walking. Siggy caught up and put her arm around him as he walked. Together they moved through the trees, past the boulders, and across the yard. The lights on the back of the house were still swaying in the wind, doing their best to light things up. The tiny scratches covering Ozzy's arms and legs were visible for the first time.
"What's happened to you?"
Siggy asked. Ozzy didn't answer. Siggy looked up and saw the shattered window in the room above the garage. The light from the room shone down.
"Did you jump from there?"
Ozzy blinked and kept walking.
"Your mom's not going to be happy about this," Clark said to Siggy. "She said to keep things in order."
"You're the chaperone,"
Siggy argued. Ozzy walked through the breezeway and started climbing the stairs to his room.
"What do we do?"
Siggy asked the bird.
"Maybe he wants to jump out the window again," Clark suggested. "Some people live for the thrill of dumb things."
When they got to Ozzy's room, he walked directly to his bed and climbed in. Reaching down, he pulled the blanket up from the floor, covered himself with it, and closed his eyes.
Clark perched himself on the remaining bed knob at the foot of the bed. The wind coming in through the broken window caused him to sway.
"Should we call a doctor?" Siggy asked.
"You think she could find the flashlight?"
"The flashlight's gone, Clark."
The small metal bird shivered.
"Maybe Ozzy just needs sleep?"
"Maybe."
Siggy didn't look sure of anything.
"One of us needs to stay here and keep an eye on him. We need to make sure he doesn't do something else like that."
Siggy's words fell on deaf metal. Clark had already shut down. The wind rocked Clark some more, and he fell off the bed knob and onto the mattress near Ozzy's feet.
"Some guard bird."
Siggy moved the desk chair nearer the bed and out of the direct path of the incoming wind. She took a seat. She sat looking at Ozzy. Her hair was wet, her mind was a mess, and the wind wouldn't shut up. She knew very well that what had just happened was caused by more than just a blustery night. Something terrible was brewing. Something was happening, and she had never felt more anxious to have her father back. Unfortunately, anxiety does nothing to help the cause. Chapter 3. Slipping Through the Door. The wizard moved up the street quietly and with speed. His eyes took in the dark night before him as he searched for any potential hazards or obstacles ahead. The scene was still, and the town was sleeping. He dashed in a fashion befitting a wizard, making it across the empty road and over to his destination. Gazing at the front of the building, he felt a sudden and surprising sense of guilt. There was some reason to worry, but he knew what was at stake. Finishing the task was all that mattered. He reached out and tried the knob. The door was locked. The wizard pulled his wand from his robe and spoke softly.
"Centabio, a finisher."
The door opened, and he stepped inside. The dark interior was void of people, but contained some obstacles. He could see the shadows and outlines of the areas he needed to search.
"Resped umidino."
The words caused a small flame to burn in his hand and light the space. He quickly and carefully searched the room. Finding nothing, he unlocked another door and moved into the inner chamber. His hands and eyes looked over everything, taking care to leave things as undisturbed as possible. A locked drawer offered some difficulty and resisted his initial spells.
"A staff would be nice,"
he whispered, knowing how magical leverage could be. Having no staff, he found a closed umbrella in a bin by the wall. He placed the tip of it under the top of the drawer and pried it up. The locked drawer popped open, and inside it, he found a few items of interest, but not what he had come for.
"Quite disappointing,"
he muttered. A weak light came into the room through a small square window at the back of the inner chamber. The wizard looked out and saw lights moving in the distance. He turned and walked back through the two doors and out into the dark night. Once outside, the wizard pulled his robe tightly around him and walked quickly and undetected through the wind, acting as if he were simply a part of the strong breeze, blowing back to where he had come from. Chapter 4. Scared of What the Morning Brings. Sunlight poured into Ozzy's room and applied a sugary white glaze to everything. The air was cool and smelled like the ocean, salty with a hint of sulfur. Ozzy had slept peacefully and soundly through the night and hadn't taken any additional strolls into the ocean. Siggy had slept in the chair at the foot of his bed all night. When morning arrived, Clark had woken up,
allowing her to take a shower and dress in clean clothes. Now Siggy was back in Ozzy's room. She and Clark were standing at the edge of the bed, staring at Ozzy as if he were something so delicate that even speaking too loudly might harm him.
"So, you think he's okay?" Siggy whispered.
"I don't know," Clark chirped softly. "It depends on your definition of okay. I think he's alive, but his hair looks awful." Ozzy's hair was messy, his eyes were closed, and his chest was rising and falling slowly as he continued to sleep.
"I'm not worried about his hair,"
Siggy said. "Sad." Clark shook his small metal head. "Birds are very particular about their grooming." Siggy smiled at her fowl friend. In all honesty, Clark was much more than any fowl. He was a creation, an unexplainable wonder, and completely devoted to Ozzy. He was also occasionally briefly devoted to other birds and random metal objects. Clark was powered by light hitting a thin strip of silver paint on his back. His body was mostly black, and he identified as a raven, though he could easily be mistaken for a crow. His head was topped with wiry feathers. His wings were metal with bits of leather holding them together. He jumped up and glided onto Ozzy's right shoulder. He looked up at the boy's face, and the wire feathers on his head bristled.
"He could have died," Siggy said.
"He almost did," Clark replied. "You saved his life."
"It wouldn't have been possible without you."
"That is completely true," Clark admitted. "Make sure when you're telling other people what happened that you mention that." Siggy smiled as she turned to look at Clark. Her brown hair moved like a spray of curly flowers. She had changed into a red t-shirt and black shorts. "What was up with that weather last night?" Clark asked her. "The wind was so strong I could barely fly." The two of them glanced out the big missing window in Ozzy's room. The wind had gone, and the dark night had been replaced by sunshine and clouds so new that they looked like they were still in their cellophane wrappers.
"Why would he walk into the ocean?" Siggy asked.
"Why does anyone do anything?" Clark asked.
"I saw a man in town carrying a skateboard."
"Why is that weird?"
"Who carries a skateboard when you can use it? Seems like he didn't think it..."
Ozzy let out a small moan. Both bird and girl glanced at him, concerned. Ozzy's hands twitched and his gray eyes opened for a moment before quickly shutting again. Siggy sat down on the edge of the bed.
"Hey,"
she said softly,
"are you okay?"
There was no immediate answer, but before Clark could fill in the silence with more skateboard talk, Ozzy replied.
"What happened?"
he asked, his eyelids still closed. "We're trying to figure that out," Siggy said. "It looks like you threw a bed knob at the glass, jumped out the window, and then went for a midnight walk into the ocean. You almost drowned."
"I saved your life,"
Clark chimed in. Ozzy opened his foggy eyes.
"Just like a real guard bird."
"I don't like to tweet my own beak, but exactly like a real guard bird."
"So you don't know what happened?" Siggy asked. "Or why you did any of that?" Ozzy shook his head. His eyes were clearing, and some color began to push up from his neck into his face.
"It's like those tapes," Clark said.
"The ones with the brainwashed people your dad experimented on."
Ozzy and Siggy exchanged a pair of worried glances.
"What?" the bird tweeted. "Am I wrong?"
Ozzy's parents, Emmett and Mia Toffee, had been brilliant scientists. They were wise beyond their years, clever beyond all belief, and intelligent to the point of their own destruction. They had discovered a way for humans to control their own willpower, no more harmful decisions or erratic behavior.
But the formula had problems. If it was administered the wrong way, the formula gave control to someone other than the intended person, making it possible for that someone to dictate the other person's actions. Ozzy had heard the experiments on the tapes his parents had left behind. A woman had climbed on stage at a play and started to sing. A man had jumped into a polar bear exhibit and almost died. And now, it seemed as if Ozzy, as well, had done something he had not chosen to do.
"But I don't get it," Clark said, sounding bothered. "Who's controlling you? And why would they have you walk into the ocean? That's so pointless. I'd make you gather a bunch of random metal things and have them do my bidding."
"You want random metal things to do your bidding?" Siggy asked.
"The way you say it makes it sound evil," Clark complained. "I just need a few nice pens or tin cups to place around my nest. What's wrong with that? Maybe some salad tongs too, you know, just be there for me. I saw a really nice pair in that store in Otter Rock."
"Okay," Ozzy said. "Next time I lose control of my mind, I'll bring you a frying pan." Clark looked pleased. Siggy did not.
"This isn't a joke. You almost died. I almost died. And the window's broken. My mom's not going to be happy."
Ozzy's finger buzzed as Siggy spoke. He moved it under the covers.
"I didn't die," he reminded her. "Maybe I was just sleepwalking."
Siggy rubbed behind her ears as if a headache had just come on.
"I don't think you were sleepwalking."
"I don't either," Ozzy confessed.
"It's too bad my mom's not here."
Siggy leaned in closer to examine a few of the small cuts on Ozzy's right arm.
"I think we're going to have to take you somewhere to get you looked at."
"I love to be looked at too," Clark said.
"Sorry, Clark, that's not what I meant."
Siggy stood up.
"We need to get him to a doctor."
"I don't think we do."
Ozzy sat up in the bed. "No doctor is going to know what to do with me."
"So we just wait and see if it happens again? You know, the next time could kill you."
Ozzy shook his head.
"Your mom's gone till Wednesday, and I know Rin's not here, but I still don't want a doctor."
Clark looked happy.
"Mr. Wizard would be so proud," the bird sang, putting his wings on his hips. "He was all about waiting around to see what happens. Fly onto a train, eat lots of breakfast, wait and see where the magic will strike. And no offense," Clark said passionately, "but I don't trust medical professionals. I've gotten some really shady advice from Dr. Seuss."
"The author?" Siggy asked, confused.
"Dr. Seuss is an author?" Clark said, perplexed. "I'm talking about the short guy in town who sells colorful drinks that are too cold."
"Well, Ozzy isn't talking about any Dr. Seuss."
Siggy blew an errant strand of curly hair away from her face.
"I'm happy to wait around for proof that the world is as magical as my absentee father insists it is, but I feel like your life's in danger. It would be dumb to just wait to see what happens."
"Who's to say?"
Clark asked.
"People with brains," she replied.
There was a small moment of silence as they wondered what to do. Clark was mere moments away from suggesting something that wouldn't have helped, but before he did, the sound of chimes rang out. They all looked at the intercom embedded in the wall near Ozzy's door. Most rooms in the house were on the intercom network, and so when the doorbell of the main house rang, there weren't many places you wouldn't hear it. Now it was ringing, and the sound gave all of them goose and raven bumps. There are numerous occasions when the sound of chimes can be comforting, but thanks to the uneasiness already in the room, this wasn't one of them.
Chapter 5. No Cars. Girl, boy, and bird all looked shocked, their eyes the size of saucers.
"That's weird," Clark said.
"Do you hear bells?"
Siggy nodded.
Were you expecting anyone?
Ozzy asked.
No,
Siggy said, whispering needlessly.
The gardener comes today, but he never rings or comes inside.
Ozzy got out of the bed.
What are you doing? The bird chirped.
We should answer it.
Should we?
Clark looked at Siggy for support, but she just shrugged.
Sometimes it's best to just ignore things. Seriously, he insisted, I read that online. It was in an article about mockingbirds.
I always wanted a doorbell at the cloaked house, Ozzy said. I think I thought my parents would return and ring it someday, or that someone would drop by and deliver me warm food.
That never happened, Clark reminded him. In fact, the only people to come by were the ones who took your parents. It wouldn't have made it any better if they'd rung the bell first.
They left Ozzy's room and its shattered window and walked down the wooden stairs across the breezeway and into the kitchen. As they reached the foyer, the doorbell rang again. They took a moment to silently contemplate going any farther.
It's probably just a package, Siggy whispered. My mom gets stuff all the time.
I know she does, Clark complained,
and yet she refuses to buy me a label maker. You have stuff to label?
Siggy asked as she stared down the hall at the front door.
No.
The bird chirped softly. Ozzy took Siggy's hand and, with Clark fluttering by their side, they crossed the foyer and stood in front of a large front door. The doorbell rang a third time.
Someone's impatient.
Clark flew behind Siggy's curly hair to hide. Ozzy pulled open the front door. A man of regular height stood on the porch, wearing brown trousers and a faded green shirt. He was difficult to describe because he was extremely average, almost completely unremarkable in his appearance. He had short, light brown hair, shoulders, arms, everything that average people have. Unremarkable.
Hello,
he said, showing teeth that were neither too straight nor too crooked.
I have a package for Ozzy Toffee.
That's me.
If you'll sign here.
The unremarkable man reached out and handed Ozzy a small tablet.
Just use your finger and sign above the line.
Ozzy stared at his fingers as if he had just discovered something new they could do. He dragged the pointer finger on his left hand over the screen, forming his signature. The delivery man stared at his birthmark.
That's interesting, he said. My sister has a birthmark on the left side of her face.
Ozzy wasn't sure how to respond to that, so he went with,
tell her hi.
The man didn't smile.
Ozzy gave him back the tablet, and the unremarkable man handed him a small package. Have a nice day, the man said with no distinctive inflection.
After thanking the man, Ozzy closed the door and turned the lock. He sat down on the small padded bench in the foyer. Clark crawled out from the back of Siggy's hair, struggling to free his right talon. With a solid jerk, he worked himself free, falling from her shoulder onto the floor. He hopped up quickly, pretending he'd meant to do that. Siggy sat down next to Ozzy. Together, they stared at the small cube in his hands. The box was 5 inches wide, tall, and long. It was covered in brown paper and almost as nondescript as the man who had delivered it. Ozzy's first and last name were written on one side in black marker. There wasn't an address or any other kind of markings.
Wait,
Siggy said. Without elaborating, she jumped up, unlocked the front door, and pulled it open. She dashed out onto the porch. Siggy stopped and glanced around. She then ran past the fountain in front of the house and down the sidewalk. Ozzy exited the house and raced to catch her.
What are you doing? He yelled.
Did that man have a car?
She yelled back.
I don't remember.
Ozzy stopped to better think.
I didn't hear one drive off.
I'll find out.
Clark shot up into the air and flew down the driveway.
How could someone deliver something to you without an address? Siggy asked, walking back.
I'm not sure, Ozzy admitted. Is that weird? Because it's probably just something my lawyer sent over.
Ever since Ozzy and Siggy had returned 4 months before, Ozzy had spent a good deal of time with his lawyer, a man by the name of Ryan Sevier. Ozzy's parents had left him a lot of land and other possessions, and there had been issues of guardianship and trusts to set up. Living with Patty and Siggy had been one of the conditions the court had insisted on.
Your lawyer just drops things off in plain packages?
Maybe, Ozzy said, still holding the box.
I think hanging out with you has made me suspicious of everything.
Clark was back now. He landed on Ozzy's left shoulder, chirping loudly.
I couldn't see anything, he reported. No cars for miles. Maybe Mr. Blah walked here.
Maybe I should just open this up and find out what it is, Ozzy suggested.
Siggy and Clark looked on as Ozzy tore open one side of the package. He reached in and pulled out the only thing inside, a small metal flash drive. Clark was instantly infatuated.
Well, hello.
What is this thing? Ozzy asked.
A flash drive, Siggy replied.
Even the name is exciting, the bird crooned.
Let's find out what's on it, Siggy said.
Siggy and Ozzy walked back into the house, Clark flying alongside and to the kitchen. Siggy's laptop was at the end of the bar, near the largest refrigerator. She flipped it open, and it came to life. Ozzy handed her the flash drive, and she stuck it into the USB port. The machine dinged and whirred for a moment as they kept their eyes on the screen, waiting for something to happen. The file opened and displayed three attachments. The first was an electronic boarding pass.
It's an airplane ticket, Siggy exclaimed.
It's got my name on it.
Siggy took a closer look at the screen.
And it's to New York.
Ozzy shook like a quaking leaf. New York was where he'd been born and where he'd lived with his parents until they had moved to Oregon. He was 7 when they had left, but he still had a few foggy memories of being there. Now someone unknown had sent him away to return. The thought was knee-buckling and confusing.
And the flight's for tomorrow out of the Portland airport, Siggy said excitedly. There's a return ticket for the day after. This other attachment is a ticket for a shuttle to the airport.
That's great, Clark said, but maybe I should hold on to that flashy drive until we figure this all out.
The bird was ignored.
This feels like something, Siggy said seriously. Someone appears out of nowhere and leaves you a plane ticket? That's not something that usually happens.
I still don't have a good idea of what is and isn't usual, Ozzy admitted.
This isn't, Siggy insisted. Nothing about your life is. Why would someone give you this flash drive?
I didn't even know what a flash drive was until right now, Ozzy admitted. The last file on the flash drive was just an address. Resort in New York, 11234 Avenue in Gracias, New York, New York, 10010.
Am I supposed to use that ticket and go to this address?
No one can expect you to just fly off to New York. Siggy rocked back and forth on her feet.
People tried to kill you, remember? What if the ticket's a trap?
I don't think it's a trap, Ozzy replied. Look at the name of the resort.
Siggy read it off the screen again.
So?
Resort in New York, Ozzy said. The letters spell R-I-N.
Actually, they spell R-I-N-Y, Clark pointed out, which, if you ask me, is a more interesting name.
Siggy's worry was replaced by happiness.
You think it's my dad?
I do,
Ozzy answered her. He called, said something was happening, and then this showed up. Clark jumped down from Ozzy's head and stood on the end of the bar.
Yes! He tweeted excitedly. Why wouldn't it be Rinny? I mean, it would be just like him to do something this way. Then, when you get there and find him, he'll say something confusing and claim it was magic that brought you there.
Ozzy looked at Siggy and shrugged. Siggy stopped rocking on her feet and took a moment to look confused. She half smiled and then sat down on a bar stool and began typing something on her laptop.
What are you doing? Ozzy asked.
Hoping that Clark's right, she replied. There's no way you're going to New York by yourself. I'm going with you.
I'll be fine, Ozzy insisted. I used to live there.
You were 7,
Siggy typed quickly.
I hope I can get on the same flights as you.
Now, can I have the flash drive? Clark asked.
No, Ozzy said kindly. Siggy kept typing as the mopey bird hopped back up onto Ozzy's head and settled in his hair. Their day had begun with fear and confusion, but now it felt as if it was stuffed with possibility.
Chapter 6. The Forest Before the Creep. John had delivered the package, then returned to the forest quickly to hide. From behind a stand of trees, he watched the girl come outside to look for him. He also saw Ozzy Toffee following her. Witnessing both those events was relatively unsurprising. What surprised John most was the small black bird that shot up into the sky and disappeared temporarily. The man who had hired John had told him stories about the bird. Most of what he'd been told seemed too far-fetched to believe, like that the bird had taken out a fleet of SUVs on a New Mexico freeway, or that it had been shot and left for dead on a mountaintop. But now it looked like the bird was very much alive. The man who had hired John, a man named Ray, had given John specific orders, orders that hadn't mentioned the bird being alive. John had been in Georgia finishing another task when this new job had shown up as a text on his burner phone. While most of the jobs John did for Ray were complicated and unpleasant, this one seemed simple. Ray needed John to help him get Ozzy to New York. The text to John had read, "Deliver the package to the boy in Oregon. Make sure the boy gets on the plane in Portland. Don't contact me unless absolutely necessary." John wasn't sure if spotting the bird was something Ray would think warranted contact, but if the stories about the strange creature were true, then it seemed like a detail worth passing along. From behind the trees, John saw the bird return to the boy and girl. He watched them open the package and hurry back inside. John was a decorated former soldier. He had served in the military for years before realizing that he could make much more money doing unsavory things for wealthy people like Ray. He didn't always feel good about what he did, but the pay was outstanding. He smiled. This case seemed so easy that it felt like a break. After all, how much trouble could a couple of kids be? John took out his phone and texted, "Item delivered. There is a bird." Then he slipped farther into the trees to wait patiently for a reply.